Economic data, moving markets.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Let's check numbers. Dow is up about 0.5%, more than 40 points at this hour. S&P 500 up about 0.5% as well. The NASDAQ up about 1.25%. European shares holding their own. The FTSE's up more than 3%. London and Frankfurt up as well. Asian stocks went in different directions. Nikkei down, Hang Seng up. Markets here at home responding to some economic numbers and polls out today. And Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us now from New York with more on those barometers and what people are saying in the midst of this fallout. Jeremy, things are in the green out of the gate. I guess Wall Street's forgotten about all the doom and gloom in Detroit.
Yeah, it looks that way. And we're now back to a busy week of economic indicators, a lot of them coming out this week. The big daddy of them all is going to be the unemployment number for March, which comes out on Friday. Now, today, we did have some more bad news from the Case-Shiller Index of Housing Prices. Prices declined 19% between January of last year and January of this year, which, Steve, was more or less in line with expectations.
And, Jeremy, we have consumer confidence numbers coming out in just a few minutes, right?
That's right, and we may see a little bit of a bounce at the top of the hour on Wall Street. Of course, interesting after the huge drops we saw yesterday. I did speak with Dan Cook a few moments ago. He's a senior market analyst at IG Markets in Chicago, who provided a little bit of context.
It's still really a trader's market rather than an investor's market. And whenever we have a trader's market, we will have a run-up followed by quick profit-taking. And we may have some very positive news today, which will pop it back up. But again, we have so much. Everybody's still kind of on edge.
On edge, of course, but hoping for some good news on consumer confidence. And that poll from the Washington Post ABC News this morning did give us a little clue of what we might see. It found the highest level in the last 5 years of people who think the economy is heading in the right direction.
All right. We shall see. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joining us from New York. Jeremy, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. By the way, President Obama is off to London today ahead of a big economic summit later in the week. The group of 20 meeting really includes political and economic leaders from more than 20 countries trying to get a handle on the global fallout. But lately, there's been more disagreement than anything over stimulus and regulation. Seems like payments for credit cards have been going through the roof, and Congress wants to tighten restrictions on card issuers who unfairly raise interest rates or fees on outstanding balances. The Senate Banking Committee today looks at a set of consumer credit protections. Lenders say the measures would be counterproductive. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
The Senate bill would prohibit universal default. That's when trouble with one credit card ends up raising the rates on all the cards in your wallet. Linda Sherry is with Consumer Action.
We think it's terribly unfair, the fact that the card in question, on which you may not even have been late once and have been paying as agreed, can raise your rate because of that.
But credit card issuers say the Senate's restrictions will hinder their ability to charge borrowers for the risk that they may not pay back their loan. Scott Talbot with the Financial Services Roundtable says the result will be higher interest rates for everyone.
If you clamp down on the ability of the industry to price risk based on the consumer's ability or their risk profile, then what will happen is those with better credit scores will end up subsidizing those with lower credit scores.
The Senate failed to pass similar credit card protections last year, but the bill's sponsors say the economy's decline, as well as a more sympathetic White House, means the bill is likely to pass this year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Ford said today it's offering a payment protection plan for its credit customers. It's an effort to boost sales and reassure customers who wouldn't otherwise buy a car because they're worried about their job. The automaker will cover payments up to $700 each month for up to a year on any new Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury vehicle if an owner loses his or her job. It looks a lot like Korean automaker Hyundai's deal that allows buyers to return a car within a year if they can't make the payments due to a job loss or disability.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, where you can choose up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
Ah, 'tis the time of the year for parents and students to decide about college. But in this economic fallout, that decision is causing some anxiety for parents who are looking for deals and for the four-year schools which are seeing smaller community colleges competing for dollars. Here's Emily Hanford of American Radio Works.
Kathy Moore is a counselor at Blake High School in suburban Maryland. As the price of college shot up over the past decade, she received more and more glossy brochures in the mail. Schools touting new athletic facilities, dorms with private bathrooms, fancy campus centers.
This is all glitz. But let's face it, our generation is used to all this.
They might need to start getting used to something else. Sekou Ba's an example. He started out at a four-year school in Pennsylvania. He had financial aid, but still had to borrow about $12,000. Watching the economy melt down last fall, he got nervous about graduating with lots of debt. So he transferred to a community college.
I mean, college is worth it. My parents have always told me education is the most important thing. But when colleges get ridiculous, I don't think it's worth it, because you can get the same education somewhere else for way cheaper.
Ba now takes a full load of classes at Montgomery College in Maryland, where tuition is less than $4,000 a year. And he likes it. The community college doesn't keep track of how many students transfer from four-year schools, but enrollment is up nearly 10%, and officials expect even more students in the fall. And this has expensive private colleges feeling nervous.
Why should I send my child to your school when there's a public institution down the road that costs a lot less?
This is a question Mary Ellen Duffy gets a lot these days. She's director of financial aid at Albright College, a small liberal arts school in Reading, Pennsylvania. Tuition, room, and board add up to about $40,000 a year. To keep students coming, Albright has always had to offer a lot of financial aid. And next year, they're offering even more, and freezing staff and faculty salaries to do it. I'm Emily Hanford for Marketplace.
Hope you can check us out on Marketplace later today. Emily explores how some students are rethinking their college plans in light of the recession. That's ahead today on Marketplace. And you can check us out online, too, at our website, marketplace.org. And there you'll find our online host and blogger, Scott Jaga, with the Scratch Pad, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.